Are you wondering what life is like as a med student, resident, practicing physician? Listen in, because our guest today is the founder of Life of a Med Student, whose avocation since 2011 has been creating a website and community where pre-meds and med students can both answer those questions and find answers to those questions. Welcome to the 290th episode of Admissions Straight Talk, Accepted's podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you show that you both fit in at your target schools and are a standout in the applicant pool. The result? You get a message one day that causes you to jump up and down shouting, "Yes, I'm in!" And not only in, but in at the best program for you. This podcast episode is brought to you by Accepted's on-demand webinar, Get Accepted to Med School in 2020, in which we cover how to choose schools thoughtfully and strategically, apply early without compromising quality, prepare for interviews, and much more. You really don't want to miss this invaluable advice. Access it all at accepted.com/medschool2020. And did I mention that the webinar is free? It is. Check it out. Our guest today, Dr. Charles Cochran, is a Hoosier through and through. He grew up in Indiana, attended Indiana State as an undergrad, and Indiana University School of Medicine in Bloomington, which he graduated in 2013. Then he did his residency also at Indiana U Medical Center in anesthesiology. On the side, he started the Twitter hashtag, Life of a Med Student, and a very popular pre-med and med student website by the same name. Charlie, welcome to Admission Straight Talk.
Thanks, Linda. I appreciate being here.
Great. Now, can you tell us a little bit about your background? Obviously, you're from Indiana. That's pretty clear. But tell us a little bit more about your background and where you grew up in Indiana and things like that.
Sure. So I grew up in a small town called Spencer, Indiana, which isn't too far from IU Bloomington. Mm-hmm. And being from a small town, I actually, from the beginning, knew that I wanted to get into medicine. My dad was a chiropractor there. And so that kind of led me through that path. But growing up, I did most of the usual small town stuff. I rode horses on the weekend, hung out in the woods, learned to hunt and fish. And so kind of had a pretty traditional rural Indiana upbringing, to be honest with you.
Okay. And you are still in rural Indiana, so clearly you like it.
Yeah. It's one of those things that when you're younger, you think you'll get out and never come back. And then your priorities change a little bit. And then here I am, very happy to be back in rural Indiana, working at a hospital in Terre Haute.
Wonderful. Okay. How did you become interested in medicine?
So as I was saying, my dad was a chiropractor. And although he didn't push me to go into chiropractic, he kind of gave me exposure to medicine, especially kind of rural clinician. And so he thought if I was interested, and I was from my experiences with him, to go ahead and pursue a more advanced license and become a physician, either an MD or a DO. And so even from my high school days, I had a pretty clear idea that I was going to go into medicine. And luckily, I'm one of those people that I knew it early and it all worked out. And here I am, what's a decade or so later, and I'm finally finished.
It's nice. That's true. You didn't do a gap year, right?
No gap year. No, I went all the way through.
Straight through. Okay. Yeah. Any regrets about that? Are you happy you did it that way?
I'm happy I did that. You know, there's a lot of experiences you can get from gap years that are certainly great for both personal growth and, you know, looking good for an admission. But I think now being through and starting to have to pay back my student loans and being in my early 30s, I'm sure glad I went through as fast as I could, and tend to encourage people to get through it as fast as you can, you know, unless you need to take a gap year for some reason.
Right.
But man, it's nice to finally be done after a long, long journey.
I bet. Now, think back. I realize this was a while ago, but it also probably is part of the reason that you started the hashtag Life of a Med Student. I guess that was a little later. For you, what was the hardest part of applying to medical school?
Well, so I was part of the Indiana State / IU's rural bachelor / MD program. And okay. So luckily for me, applying to medical school is actually pretty straightforward. That was a great program that took people from small towns like myself and kind of gave them a pathway to become physicians with the hope that they would then return to smaller towns and practice medicine.
Mission accomplished.
Yeah. I mean, their goal was, of course, primary care, which I didn't go into and went into anesthesiology. But I'm still in a very rural area living and working at a smaller, mid-sized, community hospital. So I think their goal was achieved. And so in a lot of ways, medical school was kind of set up for me from the first day of undergrad. If you followed all their steps and had the minimum GPA, which I think was like a 3.5, and you had the average of the year before MCAT, your admission was pretty much guaranteed. You still had to go through the process, but I don't think they've ever denied anybody who met all the goals of the program. Mm-hmm. So from that standpoint, I was I'm kind of lucky, to be honest, because once I got into that program, it was a matter of sticking with it. And then my ultimate path was pretty much guaranteed if I did those things. And while it wasn't always easy, I had to take the MCAT a second time in order to get that score. Once I got that score, that MCAT release day, I pretty much knew I was guaranteed to get in. And so that was really my big day, was getting that MCAT score, maybe even a little bit more than my interview day for medical school.
Wow. Did you apply at any programs outside Indiana, or you were pretty confident in?
Well, not really. When I got the better MCAT score, I applied to University of Cincinnati, and I think I was kind of waitlisted, and then I never followed up by that point. I knew I wanted to go IU. It was pretty much a done deal. So there was no sense in interviewing at a bunch of other places.
Sure, for sure. What was the best part of your medical experience at Indiana University?
So Indiana University is kind of different in that there's a bunch of regional campuses. So there's 8 or 9 different places you can go for the first 2 years. And then traditionally, most students come back to Indianapolis for years 3 and 4. And so I'll say that's both the best and sometimes the worst thing about that program is you're one place for 2 years and then you're in Indianapolis for 2 years. For me, I really liked that experience because I got to see how medicine was practiced in Terre Haute. So I was actually in Terre Haute for those first 2 years. And so I got that rural experience that I came from and I enjoyed. And then I moved to the big city for years 3 and 4 and got to see all the big, the trauma hospitals, the big cases. I mean, the really cutting edge technology that you think of with a large academic center. And so I really liked having both those experiences. I got to meet a whole new group of friends, in years 3 and 4. So your social network really widened out. So it was a big positive, I think, to be able to kind of see it from both sides. It's a very efficient system. They have these 9 campuses and they do a really good job of kind of integrating you back once you come to Indianapolis at the last 2 years. So I enjoyed that aspect of it.
What was a negative? Just the fact that you had to move, or was there something else that you found negative?
You have to move. I'll say when I went through, I didn't think they did as good of a job of making all the regional campuses quote unquote identical. And so when I got to Indianapolis, I'd say, oh my gosh, I got beat up in pathology. And, somebody that, was in Fort Wayne was, oh, pathology was so easy. I think they've changed that now. I do a little bit of mentoring with some medical students, and now most of the tests are all standardized. So everybody takes the same test, whether you're in Terre Haute or Bloomington or Fort Wayne. And I think that was probably the biggest negative that I saw, that my experience I didn't think was perfectly identical to somebody's at a different regional campus. I think they've done things to try to tighten that up a little bit.
Okay. You mentioned, I guess, one thing that already could be improved. Is there anything else that you would like to have seen improved when you were at Indiana University?
In the first 2 years, the smaller campuses put a premium on keeping track of where you are and lectures, attendance. And so I think kind of as the digital age is evolving, that maybe not everyone's learning style is beneficial for sitting in a lecture hall all day. I often felt like I learned nothing for the first 4 hours of the day and then would go home and teach myself it because I'm the person that writes things out. I have to read it and write it. And so when I got to Indianapolis, I found that I did even better in my standardized tests because I was, following my study patterns almost exactly. I think for me, there was a little bit of wasted time in lectures that if the lecture wasn't just awesome, then, I probably would have been better off at home, reading and writing my own notes as I like to do. So that's one thing that I think is technology has improved that, and it could be different now, certainly. But I think at the smaller campuses, they keep a little closer track on that kind of thing.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that you participated in Indiana's rural health program. You mentioned its impact in terms of how you got into medical school, but what were some of the differences for you being in that program in medical school?
Well, so they have a continuation of it in medical school, which is geared towards primary care. So I could have continued that program. I chose not to because I had some reservations that I would end up in primary care, to be honest. And while it was always probably one of my top choices, I knew that in the end of the day that there was a reasonable chance I wouldn't end up a primary care doctor or family practice doctor. And so I wanted to keep my options a little bit more open. And so while that was a great program for me to get into medical school, and I really do believe that they got, quote unquote, got their money's worth by me being back basically here and in a small town, I knew in medical school that maybe I didn't want to follow that same path further.
Yeah. You're still serving a rural population. You're just
I'm still serving a rural population. I'm just not doing it as a family practice physician.
Right.
But I think that's still a win-win for the program. And honestly, some of those exposures, even though I decided not to do family medicine, the type of people I interacted with and the experiences I had probably helped me get back to where I am today, certainly. So I think overall, win-win for both me and that program.
Right. How did you decide to specialize in anesthesiology?
Oh, so, I mean, it comes down to, when I was in family practice clinics, I just felt like the days dragged on. And then, I went to the specialty called anesthesia, and everything's, kind of high strung and moves fast. And you're just kind of always on the go. And then you get some downtime where it feels like you're not doing much. And then you're always on the go. And so the days went by so much faster. And I realized that I liked critical care medicine. And anesthesia is a nice way to get into, critical care, procedural medicine. I get to use my hands all day long. I'm good at things that sometimes might scare other physicians, which kind of a sense of pride to me. And, at the same time, anesthesia typically has a pretty good lifestyle. So I get to spend a lot of time with my wife and daughter, and I'm home quite a bit. And, for me, I saw this as a job where, I had the aspects of medicine I wanted to do with a future lifestyle that I thought could keep me happy. And it's certainly been the case. I very much enjoy what I do every day.
That's fantastic. That's a tremendous gift.
Yeah, it is.
To wake up every morning liking what you do for work. I really do.
I'm very, very glad I get to do what I get to do every day.
Right. I'm trying to remember, there's a Will Rogers quote, I think, about I never went to work because I loved what I did every single day.
Yeah,
something like that.
You love what you do, you'll never work a single day or something, I think.
Something along those lines, yeah. That's
been my experience. There's a lot of negativity in medicine. It's popular for the burnout being a big talk right now. And it's certainly applies. I was either dumb luck or smart or whatever you want to say. I picked a specialty that a lot of the things that burn physicians out don't apply to me. I take care of one patient at a time. I have about 10 minutes worth of paperwork that I can do while I'm taking care of that patient. And when I go home at the end of the day, I rarely have to deal with medicine. I'm usually on or off. And I don't fight with insurance companies. There's nobody between me and the patient. So I do what I think's best at the time. Occasionally I'll get, emails about, well, maybe we shouldn't use so much of this or that. And, my cookbook might change a little bit based on cost. But at the end of the day, it's basically between me and the patient. And I do what I think's best every single day. And I don't get too much pushback. And so a lot of those things that physicians just rightfully so get so frustrated with don't apply to me in my current job or specialty.
That's fantastic. Did you ever have a rotation or an experience or a period in your path through medical school and training where you really wondered if you'd made the right decision? I mean, because there is a lot of talk about burnout.
It is a lot.
And obviously you went through residency, you went through internship, all that stuff, the long hours.
Yeah, I will say there were two parts of medical school that I thought were the hardest. One was the first semester.
School or of residency?
Medical school. Yeah, I thought that was absolutely the hardest semester of medical school. I mean, I thought it got easier every month after that.
Okay.
And then same thing with residency. The first year's the toughest, and then it gets better after that. But other than just getting kind of my butt kicked the first semester of medical school, learning how to study again and really meeting my potential, as far as what I thought I could do compared to maybe what I could get away with in undergrad. you know, I really can't say that I had a lot of days where I didn't feel like it was the right path for me.
Well, that's good. Yeah. That's good. I mean, I think, obviously, I've talked to a lot of younger doctors and med students and residents, and some of them will say there was a period where they really thought about it and then they moved on and they're very happy. Most say they're very happy in their career and their career choice.
It's interesting. I think, you know, the old question is, would you let your kids go to medical school? I absolutely would. However, I would very strongly encourage them to go into some specialties over others, to be honest mm-hmm. with you. There's a lot of variability between specialties. You know, even anesthesia, you can find jobs where you just work yourself to death. And people do it because it generally pays well if you do that. But I mean, overall, picking a lifestyle specialty to me is one of the smartest choices that I've made. And, you know, we need doctors who are, you know, tough trauma surgeons and work the, you know, hours that I don't want to work, to be completely honest. But I do worry sometimes that those are some of the physicians that get burnt out the easiest.
Right.
So I would be happy if my daughter wanted to go to medical school. But I probably would tell her, you know, make sure you know what you're signing up for, because, you know, some of these, especially surgical subspecialties, man, it's a rough residency, and even your career afterwards can be pretty demanding still. And, you know, you just got to weigh the benefits, you know, against, you know, that lifestyle.
Right. And I do think that I ask that question a lot. And we have had a show that discussed burnout and depression among physicians not too long ago. I ask that question because I also think it's really important that pre-meds and med students think about it.
Yeah.
That there are going to be days that are rotten.
Yeah, it's hard.
There are going to be difficulties.
Yeah, it's hard. And, you know, some people, I think, start going down this path and don't really take a moment to see, you know, it takes 10 years. You know, I'm 32, you know, I started this when I was 22, you know, I mean, when I was a pre-med at 19, you know, I mean, so it takes, you know, years and, you know, you can't put a price on your 20s, so to speak, you know, so you got to be willing to kind of give that up and be grinding away in medical school and then residency. And, you know, debt's a huge thing too. I mean, you know, the average debt now is about $180,000. And I think a lot of people now are going $200,000-$300,000 in debt, you know, and when you wake up, and you better love your job and you better hope it pays well enough to pay those back. Right. And so, you know, I try to talk about finances a little bit on the website because I think I never thought about it. I mean, my fourth year of medical school, I went to Cancun on student loans and had a great time. But probably not the wisest thing in the world to do. And I didn't even think twice about it. I mean, it was just, I mean, it's just government free money, you know? I mean, yeah, I'll pay it back, but that's years from now. Well, now years from now, me is paying that back, and it's not fun. All right. Maybe somebody would have, you know, scolded me a little bit back then and said, you know, hey, these things add up. And then they, you know, have interest for, you know, your 4 years of residency too.
Right.
So I try to bring some of those topics in a little bit so medical students realize, you know, what they're
getting. That's tremendous. That's very, very valuable. Our eldest son at one point, he was in college, and he suddenly started talking how he wants to go become a lawyer. Mm-hmm. And he just didn't seem to us to be that, my husband and me, to seem to be that serious about it. It seemed to us that he was doing this to postpone adulthood.
Yeah.
In all honesty.
Yeah.
So we sat him down and said, well, how do you intend to pay for this? Because we indicated that we weren't going to do it.
Yeah.
And he said, I'll take out loans. And mm-hmm. We said, really? He said, you know, do you know what it would be? He said, $150,000 total. I said, okay. Do you know what the payments on $150,000 are? No, well, you know, it can't be that much. Mm-hmm. So let's figure it out.
Yeah, let's do the math.
And let's do the math. So we did the math for him. We pulled out a calculator and I just saw his eyes get big.
Oh, yeah. So I mentor medical students, and one, you know, 5 minute part of our conversation was student loans. And I said, and you know, I'm pretty open about finances, so I'll just say this. I say, I pay $5,000 a month for my student loans.
Okay.
That's how much it is. I could pay less, but the numbers and the math for me suggest I should pay them off as quickly as I can. And that's how it'll get done in 5 years. So for 5 years, I pay $5,000 a month. And they, you know, I mean, their eyes just couldn't believe. I mean, yes, it's nice that anesthesiologists are paid well, and I can do that. But, you know, still that number is just, I mean,
a big number.
I mean, right. You know, and I think a lot of times you have no idea what that number is unless you stop and start to think about it.
Right. And, our son didn't go to law school.
Yeah. Law's probably right now tougher than medicine. It's expensive, and the jobs right there. My brother's a lawyer, and he worked for the government for a few years, and then finally has a partnership track job that pays pretty darn well. But I mean, it wasn't a guarantee, and I think he's pretty good at it. I mean, there's a lot of people that end up with a law degree and nowhere to work, I think, unfortunately.
Well, I think he would have also ended up graduating right around 2008, which is when the bottom fell out of the law school market. So he doesn't have any regrets about, I don't even think he thinks about it much. But I just remember that conversation, and literally his eyes just got really, really big.
Yep.
Let's turn for a moment to the match process. How was that process, the whole residency application match process, how did it compare to applying to medical school, in terms of what you had to do and the stress?
Yeah. So again, you know, I went through that rural health program. So for me, applying to medical school was really easy. And so the match, you know, other than the first semester of medical school, was probably the second most stressful part of my medical training.
Wow.
I'm kind of a type A personality. You know, I would have loved to interview at five places, shake hands and say, okay, you got an offer. I'll go here and I'm done. And that's the way I just like to live my life. I'm just kind of a no BS person. Like, let's just call it what it is. I wouldn't have had to go to my top program, but if I would have had a reasonable program, say you come here, I would have said, okay, and we're done and, you know, moving on. But instead they drag it out for 4 months. You have no idea where you're going to live. You have no idea what your future is going to be. You know, and it's a painful process. It's, I think, an incredibly fair process, and there's probably not a better way to do it that would stay fair. And I think if it was my way and it was handshake deals all over the place, I think, you know, I don't think that's fair, in all honesty, but man, dragging it out for 4 months, having to interview at all those places, you know, the hush hush of it, you know, where we can't really give you a lot of information. You're not supposed to give us a lot of information.
Lack of control.
It's lack of control. You leave it up to a computer algorithm. And while it's a fair computer algorithm, it still feels very out of your control. And so for me, that was very stressful. My wife and I had been dating for about 5 months. So it was that perfect part where we knew it was serious. But hey, by the way, I might move across the country in a month or two. You know, so how's that going to work? I don't know, you know. And then realistically, you know, you move somewhere and you spend 4 years there, you know, you might spend your whole life there. So the match is, you know, incredibly important for your future. I think it tends to all work out and people are happy, you know, 4 years down the road, you know, that they've been to these great institutions and great academic centers. But man, it's a lot of influence on your life for one computer algorithm.
Were you happy that you matched it?
I was. They were my first choice. I was very happy. But I strongly considered going to the University of Tennessee was my second choice. It was a nice program, very different than IU, a little smaller group. IU is a gigantic anesthesia program. This had like 6-8 residents, I think.
Oh, wow.
So polar opposites, you know. So I decided if I wasn't going to go IU, I was going to go to something entirely different for once. But I like outdoor stuff. I was a big Peyton Manning fan. I always joke. So why not go to the University of Tennessee in Knoxville? And so I would have been happy.
It's not that far, is it? I mean,
wouldn't have been that far. I mostly applied to places I could drive. I did do that. Family's important to me. So that made a huge part of my decision-making process.
Okay. Let's turn to life of a med student. How did you come to start it? How has it evolved? What are your plans going forward?
Sure. So life of med student started, I think it was December of 2011. I was a third year medical student and Twitter was becoming kind of popular. And there were a couple website or Twitter accounts that kind of started to connect, you know, medical students, or they were anonymous, what are kind of popular on Twitter is anonymous accounts. So these people who can say what they want to say, and they're all popular, but they're kind of about an individual person. And I thought, you know, someone needs to get all this together in a central place. And Twitter, of course, has the hashtag, which kind of does that. And so I was thinking about it. I was like, man, maybe I should just start it and start the Twitter account. And the hashtag life of a med student could be this kind of funny, but educational, ironic, you know, but humorous look at the life of a med student. And, you know, I quickly found that whether you go to med school in, you know, Indiana or California, or heck, across the pond in the UK, this experience is incredibly similar. And some of the stressors are incredibly similar, even though the process might be slightly different. These feelings of just delaying your adulthood and wondering what you're going to do with your life and if this is all really going to be worth it. And the hours and hours of study, and man, I mean, that's a common thread among all med students. And so I found that people really resonated with it. And so they would share their little witty humorisms about medical student life. And, you know, and then I could amplify those through the hashtag. So I just follow the hashtag and create a site based around that so that other people could share in using that hashtag, and I could amplify that voice. And so I did that for years, and even through medical school and residency, I managed to keep it going. And quite honestly, there were several other websites, not websites, but Twitter accounts when I started that were much bigger. You know, there was one called Med Student Probs or Med Student Problems or something. But they all died off over the years because people didn't keep them active, for one. And two, you just got to keep the thing going. And so mine continued. And then it was in 2016, I decided to create a website / blog based on the Twitter account. And I did that after basically when I was finishing residency, I became interested in kind of financial blogs and thought, you know, this would pair well with my Twitter account. You know, what if we could continue that idea that I originally started, which was to give medical students a voice and to be able to amplify that using social media. And so the website then started as mostly my experiences in medical school and kind of my thoughts on medical education and the process, you know, posts on how I learned to study or posts on why I retook the MCAT, and what I did differently the second time to get that better result. Yeah. You know, all the way down to, you know, residency issues, financial issues, you know, how do you pay for medical school? How much student debt is expected? And then as it grew and the website and Twitter account became more and more connected, I started doing guest posts for medical students. And I said, if you want to have your post shared, I'll share it not only on the website, but through the Twitter account, and continue that original idea, which was to share the voice of medical students. And so that's what it's kind of delved into, where now I write maybe 25% of the posts. And, you know, the rest of it is just guest posts from different medical students around the country who share, you know, certain aspects of their lives, their experiences, their concerns, their successes, whatever they want. I really have very little restrictions on what people will post. People post about patients who have died and how they experienced that. People have posted about how they, you know, what they wish they knew before they started medical school that now they do know. And so, you know, I try to keep it very informal and open. And I would describe mostly that as the way the website kind of flows. And so it's basically.
But you also keep it very real.
It's very real. I try to keep it basically just what I originally wanted, which was for medical students, a way to express themselves. And so the Twitter account was never meant to be about me personally, although it has to be in some respects because it was my experience originally. The website is also not supposed to be about me personally. It's more about the idea of medical students and medical education and that training process, you know, that starts as a pre-med and, you know, ends basically where I am now as a young attending. And so even though I'm no longer a medical student, life of a med student goes on, and it will always be life of a med student. No matter till I reach retirement, you know, if the website's still around then, because that's what it was meant to be about. And that experience is what I found was important to share.
So are you going to, let's say, add the life of a young physician to the site? Are you going to have a different site, or are you going to?
No, I doubt it. I really don't want to start another blog, to be completely honest.
I can understand that.
I like social media. I enjoy the Twitter account. I don't love being a blogger. It's not on my list of favorite activities, to be honest with you.
Okay.
I'm good at running the social media aspect of it, and I like occasionally lending my voice to the Life of a Med Student website through topics that I find particularly important, whether they be, you know, things that I went through. You know, one of my biggest posts on there is how I taught myself to study, and that gets a lot of traffic because, you know, when I went to medical school, I didn't know how to study. I made it through undergrad just getting through, basically. It was a small school. I was able to do well by just whatever I wanted, for better or worse. And then you go to medical school, and I had to teach myself how to study. And so that was quite a process, So posts like that that are important to me, I continue to share. But as far as day-to-day blogging, I'm not in an academic center. I like being in quiet, rural Indiana. I don't need the spotlight. I'm happy to keep it focused on med students themselves.
So you welcome contributions from current med students or pre-meds or residents about their experiences.
It's amazing. I've gotten posts from pre-meds all the way through older attendings, looking back on their medical school career. And I think each of those voices is very important, kind of to help show medical students what the future looks like and what they can expect. And people like to share their own experiences. I think that's great. And I'm glad to have this outlet, where, a post can be seen by, thousands of people. And I think that's great.
People like to share their own experiences, and other people like to learn from others' experiences. That's that's what gives your site life, frankly. I think it's very valuable. What would you have liked me to ask you?
That's a great question. We talked about almost everything I found was important. One of the big things I encourage medical students to do is I talk about finances a lot on the website, not just to beat it home, but it is such an important part of being a physician. You're a high income earner. You have to be aware of that. And I think it's important to both know the benefits and some of the pitfalls of that, and especially with these student loans that just seem like going up and up and up. I think, we kind of talked about that, but I think that's so important to get a grasp on it at a younger age than I did in my medical training. And then, anything you can do to get your pre-med years kind of guaranteed like I did, or, that came with a scholarship, so help pay for that, in undergrad, I think is great. There's a lot of programs out there similar to my little rural health program that nobody knows about. And I think looking for things like that, if you think you're going to become a physician, is probably one of the biggest first decisions you can make after deciding you want to go to medical school is, okay, now can I go to a program that either, helps facilitate me getting into medical school? Because, that's huge. It can be very, very hard to get into medical school, even with great academic scores. And, going to a program that helps facilitate that, I think, is important. And, helping to pay for it, obviously, is a big deal as well.
Right. We I've already recorded the podcast, but it's going to be after in about a month after your show actually airs. It's with Ryan Inman, who's a financial planner who specializes in financial planning for physicians.
Yeah, and I was on his. He did one of my links not too long ago on a podcast. Yeah, it went through. He does a good job.
Yeah, he does, and he went through a lot of things that pre-meds, physicians in training should be considering and looking at. And it is really important because, like you said, the debt burden can be overwhelming and it compounds, it multiplies itself. And that's, I think, something that people don't think too much about.
And the other aspect is the mistakes then are so much higher. You're not dropping a $20 bill on the floor if you make a mistake with your student loans. It can be tens to hundreds of thousands of dollars difference if you don't choose the right path. Know to even, that there's multiple ways to get those things paid back. And so those mistakes can cost, cost a house, cost a mortgage if you don't play them rightly.
Or at least a room in the house.
Yeah, at least a room in the house. That's right.
Okay. So what are your top tips in terms of financial planning, just based on your experience?
Mine, student loans aren't free money. I just see that so much. I was the same way. I just didn't worry about it. I'll just take out more student loans. And when they ran out, I just took out more. It was no big deal. I lived the lifestyle of a resident when I was a medical student, you get pretty much about $150,000 pretty easily. You just fill out some paperwork and that's what you can get in 4 years. And so myself and a lot of people, that's what they get. They don't really think about, could I take less than that? Could I cut how much I eat out or cut, what I do on the weekends and take less, that's about what I took. I took the max, every time. And so then I just spent it, And if I had extra, then I think at one point I talk about on the website, I bought a TV, Well, you know, now 6% interest times 6 years later. I mean, that was a very expensive TV.
Or the trip to Cancun.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, not the best financial moves, but I didn't know any better. So, you know, my general advice is just open your eyes, you know, get on the website, you know, any website that talks about financial advice for, you know, young professionals, medical students, you know, and just get a little bit interested in it. You don't have to go delving into the, you know, nitty gritty of it, but just realize that, you know, there's this information out there and it can make a big difference in your life. I mean, I pay back every month and I think about, man, if I just would have did things a little differently, maybe that'll be 3 years instead of 5 years, you know, and what a difference that'll make for us.
Those things. That's part of maturing. Like, you know, I should have done something different. That's just part of it. But you can also look back on some things that you did right. And apparently you chose the right profession.
So, I chose the right profession. I'm very happy. It's worked out for me. And I feel like it's, you know, most days it's a blessing that I am where I am and everything's kind of settled to what it is.
That's great. Okay. Charlie, I think we're just about out of time. First of all, thank you very much for joining me today. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Where can listeners find you online?
So the Twitter account is called Life of a Med Student, or just follow the Twitter hashtag, which is hashtag Life of a Med Student. And then the website is lifeofamedstudent.com, which has, you know, like I said, great posts from pre-meds to medical students to physicians, you know, who are much better writers than I am, who can, you know, kind of show you the path through medical school and find some things to relate to.
Okay, great. We'll link to Life of a Med Student, the site, the Twitter account, and the Twitter hashtag, as well as other resources related to this podcast from exhibit.com/290. Listener, thank you too for joining Dr. Charles Cochran and me for Admission Straight Talk's 290th episode. If you find the show worthwhile, I have a favor to ask. Please tell your friends about the podcast. Your doing so helps us spread the news about Admission Straight Talk. Final thank you to today's sponsor, Get Accepted to Medical School in 2020, an accepted webinar. Access the insight you need to apply successfully. View the on-demand webinar at accepted.com/medschool2020. Thanks again for coming. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I'm your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.